You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.
Hello, and welcome to today's Live Talk. I'm your host, Charlie Field. Today, we'll be speaking with Colonel David M. Parrish, Detention Department Commander for the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office in Tampa, Florida. Colonel Parrish is a graduate of Penn State University and holds a master's degree in criminology from Sam Houston State University. He is an author, and he serves on the American Correctional Association's Board of Governors and is past president of the American Jail Association and past chairman of AJA's Jail Manager Certification Commission. In 1981, the first direct supervision county jail in the United States opened in Contra Costa, California. This represented a radical departure from traditional jail design and operation. And since that time, many jail practitioners have accepted direct supervision as the most practical and cost-effective way to run a jail. Today, Colonel Parrish will discuss Hillsborough County's experiences with direct supervision and the impact that it has had on jail design. Welcome to today's Live Talk, Colonel Parrish.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Colonel Parrish, can you describe your facilities in Tampa and their expansion over the years?
Sure. In Hillsborough County, we have about a million people. And our consolidated jail system services the entire county. So we take care of about 25 separate law enforcement agencies. We have 3,300 beds in the system. Unfortunately, we have about 3,700 inmates today, so like most jails systems, we're pretty crowded. We have two major jails, the Orient Road Jail and the Falkenberg Road Jail, then a smaller facility at Morgan Street, and then a 175-bed work release center. All of our facilities, with the exception of Morgan Street, are direct supervision jails and have all been built since 1990. So we're a little bit unique in the design and operation of our system.
You've been with the Sheriff's Office for 28 years now, and in our previous conversation, you said you feel like you've been in the construction business for 28 years.
Yeah, I thought I got in law enforcement, and I really did get in the construction business. And then, ironically, I guess I've spent 21 years in jail now as the commander of our system. I'm working on a life sentence. But I've had the opportunity to replace an archaic system that had been consolidated back in 1973 and 74, and so I was given a unique opportunity to replace it with something more modern, more efficient, more cost-effective, and that's certainly what we've done in Hillsborough County.
Can you explain for our audience the difference between traditional supervision and housing of inmates with the direct supervision approach?
Sure. Actually, the first direct supervision jails came about through the Metropolitan Correctional Centers in the late 1970s, the first direct supervision county jail, Contra Costa, in 1981. Prior to that time, and unfortunately today, some places they're still building things like this, but virtually all jails were of a remote design, and there were basically two forms, one where all the cells were in a line, and it was referred to as linear intermittent surveillance, so all the officer would walk up and down a catwalk in front of the cells. That's really what most people are used to seeing when they watch TV and they look at a prison design. And then the next generation was podular remote, where the officer would sit inside a glass control room of some type, looking out onto a pod where people were out in a day room, but then had individual cells to go back into at night. In both cases, the inmates ran 90% of the facility, all of the housing area, and the staff ran 10% of the facility, the hallways and the control rooms. And never the twain did meet, basically, unless there was a problem. The staff would stay in their territory and the inmates would stay in theirs, and that resulted in generally the toughest inmate in the place running the housing area and then staff responding to problems after they developed, not preventing them. And that's the way we've been building and operating jails in this country for well over 200 years. And we finally came to the conclusion that there's a better way to do business, that we need to run the whole jail, not just the hallways and control room, And we committed to what Contra Costa put in place, direct supervision, where a deputy actually lives in the housing area with the inmates face-to-face 24 hours a day with no bars or glass between them. We have one deputy with 64 inmates in a pod like that, and I equate it to sort of like the teacher in the classroom. And if the teacher's in the classroom, generally the kids are learning, but if the teacher's on a break, drinking coffee or a smoke break or something like that, then what's happening back in the classroom? The kids are certainly not learning. Well, we're dealing with a bunch of bad grown-up kids, and if you leave them unattended, they take over. So we opted to run the whole place and by putting a deputy inside the housing area. To make that work, the deputy has to have a hammer, has to have an alternative. So direct supervision housing, as I've described, works for 90% of the population. Then 10% of the population has to go to some alternative form of housing, which is more traditional, much more expensive, steel and concrete, single cells, pass-through feed slots, and so forth, which is the alternative. If you don't abide by the rules in direct supervision, then you've earned a place in lockdown, and you sit in there 22 to 23 hours a day. You come out 1 hour to 2 hours a day, and if you were that stupid, you earned it. You know, I mean, it was like instant repercussions for your actions, and that's what makes direct supervision work. The deputies do have to have a place to put people who can't abide by the rules.
Can existing facilities be modified for direct supervision, or is it your preference that the facility be designed specifically to address the tenets of direct supervision?
The best way to deal with the issue is to design properly from scratch. Direct supervision has been adopted as a means of operating a traditional jail. It can work, but it's not nearly as effective because in traditional jails, each housing unit is generally not large enough to make it cost effective. And also very seldom has the support functions that are necessary to make direct supervision work. The idea behind direct supervision is that a pod of whatever number, and as I said, in our jurisdiction it's 64 inmates with one deputy, is basically a little self-contained jail that has its own visitation space, its own feeding space, its own little self-contained rec yard, all within the security perimeter. So that deputy is basically running a small jail and doesn't have to move inmates out to other functions except to go out to be inmate workers or to go to court or that sort of thing. And in a traditional jail, it's very, very difficult, well, it's virtually impossible to get all of those functions in a facility that was not designed for that. So it can happen, it can work, it's not as efficient, and certainly a lot more difficult to put into practice than in a properly designed direct supervision facility that was started from scratch that way.
Let's talk for a moment about staff safety. When direct supervision was introduced, were there concerns about direct supervision from the staff, and can design alleviate some of these concerns?
The simple answer is absolutely. Even I, when I first looked at direct supervision back around 1982, said, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, inmates in my jail system would tear up a place like this. You know, what would happen to the officers and so forth? Well, fortunately, I kept an open mind and then did determine that direct supervision is actually a safer work environment than a traditional jail. And it takes a few things to make that happen. One is a proper design. The inmates need to know that there's going to be an instant response if there's a problem. So every officer in a direct supervision setting has multiple means of communication, not just telephone, not just computer, not just intercom, but a radio on his or her hip at all times with an emergency button on it. And all the deputy has to do is hit that button, and it sends out a tone that says basically 2 Alpha needs help or something like that. And then other officers respond immediately. The inmates need to know that that's going to happen to prevent them from taking advantage of the officer. But But knowing that there's going to be an instant response, they soon learn that actually I'm in a safer environment here where I have a deputy with me. I actually get to eat my food. No other inmate's going to come along and take it away because I have a deputy here who's going to make sure I can get my meal. I don't have to worry about being raped because there's a deputy here and nobody's going to take me off into a corner and do something untoward. Nobody's going to steal my property because there's a deputy right here. And the deputy can kind of take the temperature of the surroundings. I mean, he can hear, feel, just tell what's going on. And if things start getting out of hand, he can intervene right away and take preemptive action. And in many cases, where there have been problems where people have kind of flipped on an officer, why other inmates have actually come in to provide support to staff, saying, I don't want this fella to mess up my pod, and this deputy's here to take care of us to make sure that we're properly supervised and that nobody takes advantage of us, you know, no other fellow inmate. So once it's put in place and the proper tools are given to staff and proper training and then the expectations are laid out for inmates, it's extremely effective and actually a much safer work environment than in a traditional facility.
If you're just joining us, we are talking to Colonel David M. Parrish of the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department in Tampa, Florida, about direct supervision and its influence on the design and operation of jails. Getting to the design and construction of jails, how has direct supervision reduced construction costs for your department? Is this one of the reasons why the model is attractive to practitioners?
Absolutely. Once again, and this is something that funding authorities such as our county commissioners truly appreciate. Jails are kind of unique in that they have to deal with all types of unknowns. Anybody who's arrested in Hillsborough County comes to our central booking facility, and at the rate we're going this year, we will process 65,000 inmates. We don't know what's coming through the door. It can be somebody charged with writing bad checks all the way up to a serial murderer. And a jail has to be able to accommodate all types of inmates and from one end of the spectrum to the other. What often happens is that in order to deal with the worst of the worst, special construction, special precautions are taken. And more people tend to get put into higher and higher categories. It's not knowing what's coming in off the street with an arresting officer. The safest thing to do is to treat them as if they're the most dangerous, to have the most secure housing. That gets real expensive, both from a construction point of view and from staffing. And in a prison, you know, the jail has done all this classification work. They've been through the process. They've been through the courts. And they know exactly what they're getting when they're delivered to them. Jails, as I said, are completely different. And that has ended up costing a great deal of money in building for the worst eventuality, but then treating the majority of the inmates that way. Direct supervision allows you to customize it, to be prepared for the worst person that comes through the door, but to start off with something that we refer to as a self-fulfilling prophecy, which is, I really don't care what you did out on the street, whether you held up a bank, committed a carjacking, or wrote bad checks. When you come to our jail, we expect you to behave. And when you start with that positive approach, you know what? Most people do. They've gotten the bad stuff out of their system. They've done it out on the street, whatever it was, and now they're in confinement. That then carries over into the direct supervision housing, that we expect you to behave. We expect you to keep the place clean. We expect you not to get into fights with other people. And therefore, we don't have to build to the highest security level. So in many direct supervision jails that have individual cells, the doors to the cells may be solid core wooden doors that cost $200 a piece versus a $700 steel door with a pass-through feed slot. You can have porcelain fixtures instead of stainless steel toilet and sink combinations, and there you're talking $250 versus $900. All the way across the board, much more builder's hardware, ordinary construction techniques can be put into place, of course with the exception of the perimeter wall, which must be poured solid, reinforced, very strong to make sure that nobody gets away. But it does save a great deal of money on construction, and then more importantly, on staffing, and that's where the real money is saved in any jail. Buildings are expensive, but they're nothing compared to the cost of operation, and that's what really matters, building a staff-efficient, cost-effective facility.
Do you see a trend in jails going towards, that is, in the direct supervision model, going towards dormitory-type facilities? I understand you've got some, you have a new facility with, or an expansion of a facility coming online this fall.
Yes. 20 years ago, when we first looked at direct supervision, it was in the standard was individual cells, the ability to lock people away at night. There might be builder's hardware, you know, solid core wooden doors and porcelain fixtures, which was all cheaper than the high security construction, but still required individual plumbing, electronics, and so forth. In the mid-90s, we started looking at direct supervision dormitories for general population. Now, most of my counterparts that I talked to at that time thought that I was nuts and said, that will only work for misdemeanants, trustees, or minimum custody people. Not only we, but other people around the country now are proving that that's not the case, that direct supervision can work just as effectively in a dormitory setting where you don't even have to have cells and therefore can save even more money as it does in a direct supervision setting with individual cells. And quite frankly, from the staff's point of view, it's actually easier to manage because they've got total visibility and ease of supervision. Of course, once again, the design makes a huge, huge difference. And if it's a typical dormitory like has been built in so many prisons with a bunch of double-decked bunks down the middle of the room or a mezzanine level, well, that's not going to work very effectively. It needs to be laid out like a direct supervision pod where the sleeping areas are around the perimeter. You have wide open space or day room space. It's best if you don't have a mezzanine level so that the officer doesn't have to worry about what's going on upstairs. And design, once again, truly enters into it. But direct supervision dormitories, to my mind, represent the wave of the future in direct supervision design.
One of the things that we had in a previous conversation is you said that it's one thing for these inmates to be here on an average of, what was it, 22 days?
Yes.
But you stated that your staff is there much longer. Do you want to elaborate on that and what you're...
Certainly. I spend an awful lot of time with recruitment and screening trying to hire people and then trying to keep them here. It's difficult to find somebody who wants to work in a jail setting where we've taken 64 people who have already proven they can't abide by society's rules or they wouldn't have been arrested and then we take one unarmed deputy, put him in the pod with him, and say, okay, now make him behave. A difficult job. And you're absolutely correct. The inmates are coming and going at an incredible rate. 65,000 inmates a year coming through our system. Our average length of stay is 22 days. Some people are here for only hours until they bond out. Some people could be here for up to a year or so. But the people who are really locked up in jail for life are the staff. They're there for 10, 20, 30 years. The only difference is they get to go home at the end of their 12-hour shift. And I kid around and I say, like, who's in jail anyway, them or us? And heck, it's us. And, you know, quite frankly, our staff didn't do anything wrong, and they don't need to work in a horrible environment where, in essence, they're being punished. Their workplace is the jail, so it needs to be a decent work environment. Otherwise, we'll never be able to hire and keep people to work in that setting. And they deserve the best work environment we can possibly give them. Generally speaking, people in corrections are underpaid, and certainly generally paid less than their law enforcement counterparts. and they have a very difficult job. So I think the best that we can do for them is to try and give them a safe, clean, sane work environment. And that's what we try to do with our direct supervision facilities.
On that note, I'd like to thank Colonel David Parrish for being with us today. Thank you, Colonel Parrish.
Thank you. I enjoy talking with you.
And that concludes today's live talk. Thank you to Colonel David M. Parrish, Detention Department Commander of the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office, for joining us today and discussing direct supervision and its influence on jail design and operation. Also, thank you to our audience for joining us today. For CCNN, I'm Charlie Field.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.